Just way of slightly introducing myself, those of you who may not know, my wife and I are from Salem, and so we came across over the mountain this morning. Very pleasant drive. Mr. Richard says maybe it's a little dreary here, used to sunshine maybe all the day, but it's very pleasant fall weather coming over the mountains, very pleasant drive. Only thing's a little ominous is to see Detroit Lake, so very low, and that could be portent of some difficult times ahead. I've worked as a high school math teacher for over 30 years. I'm semi-retired now. I officially retired about 2 years ago, and since then I've been substitute teaching, which I find to be a lot easier than regular teaching. I don't have to make lesson plans. I don't have to grade papers at home, and I've been working almost as much as I did, at least in the school building, as I did before. But I can come home when the kids do. I don't have to stay late. Don't have to go to faculty meetings. Don't have to grade papers at home. And so this is a pretty good life. And I still get my retirement income coming too. Because I worked for so long as a teacher, I had my summers off, and so we could do special things. And that was one of the benefits of being a teacher. You did have those summers off. And during the summer of 2011, our family went on a 3-week road trip vacation, so that 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, took as far east as Chicago. My wife has a cousin that lives there, and we saw him and his wife. But along the way, we had a great time. We visited friends and some family members in an assortment of locations. Besides the visits, though, one of the major goals on this vacation was to do a canoe trip. Some of you are going to be able to relate to that, I think, in the pristine wilderness known as the Boundary Waters of northern Minnesota. The area is called the Boundary Waters because of the abundance of lakes and rivers right along the boundary between Minnesota and Canada. In fact, the first portion of my message today could be titled A Canoe Trip Lesson. Eventually, I'm going to refer to Philippians 4, verse 11, and go from there. It'll be a little while before I actually get there, because I need to explain that when my wife was in her late teens and early 20s, she worked entire summers on the canoe crew at the old SEP program, Summer Educational Program at Orr, Minnesota, that Worldwide Church of God used to have. And she has very fond memories of those times, and she wanted at least to have one more chance to relive some of those memories and also to have our kids to at least experience some of that. It just so happened that we knew a couple in the Minneapolis church in Minnesota that had a canoe, and they had access to other canoes and equipment, and they were experienced Boundary Water canoers. So early in the spring of that year, when they learned about our plans to visit Minnesota, they offered to take our whole family, along with the two of them and two of their children, on a 5-day, 4-night canoe trip into the Boundary Waters. Since it's a very tightly regulated area, they had to apply for a permit telling the exact days on which we could enter and then leave the area. So we had 9 people on the permit. That was the maximum that you were allowed. Linda and I and our 3 kids, who at that time were, I think, 12 maybe. I can't. I'd have to do some math here. If I were better at math, I could figure that out. But anyway, they were teenagers. And the other couple, they had their 17-year-old daughter and their 16-year-old son, although they had to leave 2 of the kids at home. But there were the 4 adults and the 5 teenagers. So our equipment, though, our equipment included 4 canoes, 9 backpacks full of gear, 5 large plastic buckets full of food, a large duffel bag containing our 4 small backpacking tents, and 2 other large duffel bags containing an assortment of other camping gear. It was a lot of gear, and everything we took in had to be brought back out, including our trash. Some of the other vital equipment included a map and a compass, And in our case, our leader also had a GPS. Without these items, it would have been extremely difficult to find the different portage places where you'd have to carry your equipment across land to get to the next lake. And, of course, you could easily get lost. In fact, even with these items, you can get off course. Next, I need to explain a little bit about the campsites there. The campsites were well spread out, and they averaged about one for every 500 acres. So you needed a map to know where to look for the campsites. And they consisted of one small cast iron fire grate, a few small, relatively level, clear patches of ground in which to pitch a tent, and, of course, the all-important latrine, which also requires a little explanation. Basically, the visible part consists of a one-piece green plastic cylinder about the size of a 5-gallon paint bucket. It sticks up out of the ground over a large pit, sort of like an outhouse, except there's no housing over it. It's just freestanding outdoor toilet, completely exposed to the elements, but it does stand off away from the rest of the camp, and it's somewhat shielded by bushes and trees, usually. Now, the trip itself, parts of it were great, really wonderful. Paddling a canoe in beautiful surroundings, and you can see the wildlife, and you're with good friends. We saw bald eagles, we saw a mink, we saw a big turtle, beaver, loons. But other parts of that trip did not go as planned. In fact, things went wrong. On day one, to begin with, we got started a little later in the morning. We had to drive all the way from Minneapolis up to the Boundary Waters region there up in northern Minnesota. We started a little later than we'd hoped for, which meant by the time we finally got the canoes in the water and began to paddle out in search of a good campsite, well, other people had gotten there earlier, and they'd beat us to a lot of the good campsites. So a high percentage of those campsites were already occupied. So after an hour or so on the lake, we turned our canoes toward a small island in the middle of the lake, and we found an unoccupied campsite. I was in the lead canoe, and as we came closer to the shore, I noticed some large white streaks on the rocks in the water below us there. And I said, "Look," and I was kind of joking, "look at all the... they look like dead fish carcasses." And but then as we got closer and we looked more closely, it wasn't a joke. There really were five or six rotting dead fish or fish skins with the heads on them lying in the shallow water there. And then as we paddled closer still in maybe a foot or so of water, there was what appeared to be a disgusting ball of long white worms. And we got a little closer and looked a little more closely, and we figured somebody simply dumped a pot of spaghetti in the water right at the shoreline. And so somebody had been not too careful about maintaining the pristine quality of this area. This was not the ideal campsite, but as late as it was, we figured we'd better take it. And it was a long way to the next closest one, and even then, that might already be occupied. So we unloaded our gear. We determined the flattest, least bumpy places to set up our four tents, except that when we dumped the tents out of the tent bag, we discovered that there were only three tents, not four tents. Our leader had forgotten one of the family's tents in his garage at home. So we had a small two-man tent, a slightly larger two-man tent, and one three-man tent. So 2 + 2 + 3, that's 7. Well, we had 9 people. Our leader felt bad about forgetting the tent, and perhaps also in deference to the fact that I was the oldest one there, maybe my relatively old age, advanced age. He determined that my wife and I should sleep in the smaller two-man tent. The remaining three males would sleep in the other two-man tent, and the four remaining females would somehow squeeze into the three-man tent. So my wife and I had the best situation, I guess. It was going to be crowded in the tents, but that's the way it had to be. One does not sleep outside during the summer in Minnesota. You know why, right? The Minnesota state bird, the mosquitoes, yes. Another important issue that had to be dealt with was finding where the latrine was located. That was no problem. It was clearly visible to everybody in a wide open area, very close to where the tents were pitched, which to me, that was a problem of a different sort, but then I'd never been in the Boundary Waters canoe area before, and I figured, well, maybe Minnesota people have a different perspective on privacy or something. Found out, though, that this was an unusual situation, and it was remedied by our five teenagers in the group. They went about collecting large branches, dead tree limbs, and bushes, and they piled them up and made sort of a privacy barrier of some sorts. But now that the latrine was operational, there was another problem. The whole outside surface of it was covered with white, wiggly maggots. So I got a paper towel. I wiped the whole outside clean. But as soon as I did, more of them appeared wiggling on the seat and working their way down the outside. And it turned out they were kind of like effervescing out of the latrine from the inside out. And so down in the pit amongst all the other oogie stuff, there must have been a dead animal or something. Anyway, we got through one night at that site without any other problems, except that my air mattress developed a leak and it didn't hold air. So that was an issue for me for the rest of the trip. And I'd already been suffering from some tendonitis in the shoulder, and so it was an issue. Next day we packed up, we paddled, we did two short portages, and then we came to one very long portage. According to the map, it was listed as two-thirds of a mile, but it was brutal. The trail was rocky, it was rutted, it had significant elevation changes, ups and downs. And then with the four canoes and all the gear that we had to transport, we each had to make two trips, which actually means that you have to cover that two-thirds of the mile there and back and there and back. You have to do it three times. And also, I'm pretty sure that map was wrong about the distance. Maybe it was two-thirds of a mile as a crow flies, but round and up and down and that, it must have been at least a mile, because it seemed like it took us 15 minutes just one way, and it seems like you can walk a mile in 15 minutes, I suppose, normally. But anyway, my feet took a beating. Everybody's feet took a beating. I'd never walked or hiked in wet, soggy shoes before, and my feet were rubbed raw. Some places very blistered in other places. This was a significant issue for me, at least, for the remainder of the trip. Probably not just me. After the portage, we paddled another hour or so until we found a relatively nice campsite. So we set up there, we had dinner, and we bedded down in our tents for the night. During the night, I woke up frequently, and you tend to do that when you've got the tendonitis in your shoulder and you're sleeping on the rocky ground and your pad is flat and I got no air in it. And during some of those waking periods, I heard an unusual noise that repeated itself frequently through the night. It had kind of the low, muffled sound of like one of these slow-moving World War II area bombers, kind of off in the distance, moving kind of back and forth across the sky. And from the inside, it seemed like it was some distance away. I asked our leader about it in the morning. He said, what you heard, those are massive swarms of mosquitoes just looking for victims. I thought, wow, they make that much noise? Next day, we decided to leave all our gear at the camp, use it as a base to come back to, and then just take the canoes, do a short portage, and paddle into the Canadian waters. My shoulder was bothering me somewhat, maybe more than somewhat, so I offered to stay behind and just watch the campsite and rest up. So it was a good day for me just to rest, and it was a good day for everybody else, too. The group got back, dinner was prepared, but just as we were starting to eat, it started sprinkling. And you can endure a few sprinkles, but this quickly turned into a Minnesota downpour that drenched everybody. We didn't want to mess up the inside of our tents, so some of us ate under the marginal shelter of a nearby tree, while most of the teens set up and used a little shelter consisting of crisscrossed overturned canoes. We decided if the weather didn't get any better, we'd simply pack up, cut the trip short by one day, and then head straight back out the same way we came in. And I was kind of hoping, yeah, let's hope the weather stays bad. We just get out of here. But the weather was better the next day. So we looked at the map. We decided to follow a different route that looped around with some shorter passages to bring us back out again. Now, I want to help you visualize the lakes that we were camped on, or this particular lake anyway. It was shaped like a very narrow, elongated capital letter Y, you know, with the two branches like this, kind of very close together, but very long. And at the bottom of the Y, down where my feet would be, that's where we were camped. And about a half mile up from that, the junction of the Y is where the junction was. And from there, about three-fourths of the way up on the right-hand side, well, this is my left, but you're looking at it, so the right. So up this way, about three-quarters of the way up was where this long, brutal portage was. And then supposedly on the map on the other side was where the portage was that we were trying to go to. We wanted to avoid the long, brutal portage again. According to our leader, at the upper end, it was the new portage on the other part of the Y. The day started well. It was sunny. There was a light breeze at our backs, which was nice. And as we paddled, the wind got progressively stronger. And we were making great time. We encountered a few canoes coming the other direction, and we noticed how much they were really struggling against the wind. And we reached the junction of the Y, and the wind got strong enough to start causing small waves. And it was kind of fun, actually. You could kind of surf down the waves a little bit, and you could pick up more speed. So we're making great time. Oh, we're going to get out of here real quickly. And eventually we reached the top end of the left side of the Y, way up here, you know, where my fingers are. We got up there, and we began looking for the portage across to this other lake. Couldn't find it. Couldn't find the portage. We looked to our leader, and again, he looked at his map. He looked at his GPS. Oops, I'm sorry. I must have read the map wrong. We were supposed to take the other branch of the Y. So now we had to paddle back the same way we came, but this time, of course, against the wind. And the wind was getting stronger and stronger, and the paddling was tough. I tried to view it as just good exercise, but my shoulder was starting to feel it. And finally, we did make it around the bend of the Y there, bend in the lake, and we could travel with the wind down the other branch of the Y on the lake. And the wind was strong enough then, and my shoulder was tired enough. All I did, I just kind of braced myself in the canoe. I put the paddle up like this, and the wind hitting the paddle was strong enough that I could use it like a sail, and we could just kind of make our way that way. We passed by the brutal portage area, and then we reached the upper end of the lake, and sure enough, there was the portage that we were supposed to be taking, that we were looking for. It wasn't too long. So we got across, and it was close to lunchtime about then. We got the canoes and the gear back in the water. We went a few hundred yards and found a real nice campsite and decided to stop there for lunch. At some point, we took stock of our gear, and then someone asked, well, who's got the duffel bag with our tents? We can't find it. Who took it? Let's see. We reconstruct the morning. Our leader and his wife, they remember putting the bag with all the tents in their canoe as they prepared to leave the previous campsite. But they also remembered at some point, we got to reconfigure things in the canoe. So one of them apparently took the bag out and put it on the bank. And, oh, did you put it back in? No, I didn't put it back in. I didn't put it back in. And so nobody remembered putting the bag with the tents back in. And so our tents, all of them, were lying on the bank of the lake miles and miles and miles away. I thought at the time, wow, this could really cause some marital discord here. But it didn't. And I was impressed. Got a problem here. What are we going to do? Can we survive a night without the tents? Should we just leave the tents behind, paddle long and hard, and try and make it all the way out tonight? Is there enough daylight time left? You don't want to get stuck on a lake in a canoe after dark. No, it probably wasn't a good option. Didn't have enough time for that. Finally, our leader said, I apologize. I'm supposed to check these things so that this doesn't happen. Here's what we'll do. Luke and Joel, my son and his son, you're the strongest paddlers. You'll go with me, and we'll take one canoe. Hopefully the wind will die down. We'll go back, we'll get the tents, and we'll bring them back here for the night. Wow, could they really make it all that way and get back before dark? So they took a little food with them, and off they went. Those of us left behind went about collecting firewood, and we strung up a line to dry out everything that got soaked the night before when we had the downpour. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we started speculating. I think they'd only been gone for a little over an hour, maybe. We started speculating how long it would take them to get back. And probably won't be, they said, for at least another 3, maybe 4 hours. And if the wind is blowing, who knows? But just then, here they come. Wow, that was impossibly fast. But as they land the canoes, we notice that all of them are wet, head to toe, visibly exhausted. Were the tents there? Did you get the tents? No, we couldn't get them. We did the portage over, and we started paddling, and the wind was really bad. We could only make it 100 yards or so, and then the canoe capsized in the rough water. So they righted up the canoe, paddled back, did the portage, came back to where we were, and so we had to spend a night without the tents. We set up a shelter of crisscross canoes. We combined them with a tarp, and all the teens had room to sleep under that, so at least they were protected from whatever might have fallen from above. While my wife and I and the other couple slept under the sky and then hoped it wouldn't rain, and it didn't. In fact, I guess we were lucky, the wind continued to blow strong enough to discourage most of the mosquitoes. However, a few hours before dawn, the wind did die down enough for the mosquitoes to find us, at which time I pulled the sleeping bag up over my head, and then kind of, you have to have a little bit of room to breathe, so I kind of pulled it, so all that was sticking out was kind of my mouth, and you're breathing like this, but eventually, you're even breathing in a mosquito or two, and so you can't sleep too well like that. But by then it was almost time to get up anyway, and since we'd lost a good half day of travel time and we had to be out by the next day very early, we figured, well, we'll just pack up early and take the shortest way out of here. Unfortunately, that meant that we had to portage back to the other lake and then paddle to the brutal portage. which we did. We got to that point anyway. And while seven of us began making the back and forth trips portaging three of the canoes and the gear, two others took an empty canoe further back to our previous, the day before, campsite to retrieve the tents. And the tents were there. The wind died down, so it wasn't too bad going back to get the tents. The tents were retrieved, and the portage proceeded efficiently, but painfully. Our feet were still raw and blistered to varying degrees from the previous portages. And this time, though, adding immensely to our discomfort was a problem we did not encounter the first time through. This time, one of those massive swarms of mosquitoes had found us during the portage. I had along some of this lemon eucalyptus bug spray. It helped a little bit, but I also had a long-sleeve shirt on. But the mosquitoes, they bit right through my shirt, and in the end, I mean, I looked like I had chicken pox. And so it was quite a passage there. After that portage, though, it was pleasant paddling the rest of the way out, and we survived. At one point in considering all that had happened on the trip, the rotten fish carcasses, the maggot-filled latrine, the shortage of tents, the downpour at dinner, the hole in my air mattress, the forgotten tents, the wrong directions, etc., etc., our leader again apologized. "I'm sorry," he said, "but this just didn't work out to be a very good trip." And then his 16-year-old son spoke up and he said, "Actually, Dad, this is the worst trip we've ever had." But he didn't seem upset about it. He just said it in sort of a matter-of-fact way that it wasn't offensive. He just, "Yep, this is reality. This is the way it is." And the things that really had gone wrong didn't bother me too much. I'd kind of resigned myself to the fact that I was going to experience some difficulties and discomfort on the trip. All of us had sort of a matter-of-fact acceptance of the situation as it was, and no amount of complaining would have changed things, so nobody did. Instead, it was, "Well, we've got problems. How do we deal with them? How do we solve them?" And in the end, especially looking back, you can say it was a positive experience. You know, we're building friendships, we're enjoying the camaraderie, we shared discomforts, we shared difficulties, and we shared a few joys, and it made for a great experience. Nobody died, nobody got sick, nobody was seriously injured, but yes, mistakes were made, and people suffered some discomfort. But in spite of all the mistakes, there was no playing the blame game, no sarcasm, there were no snide comments, there were no finger-pointing, no complaining, whining, crying, grumbling, mumbling, etc., no discouraging words. There were even weren't even the nonverbal, you know, eye-rolling or things, you know, the teenagers are good at. I shouldn't say that, but adults can do that too. No scowling. Nobody was a whiny Israelite, even the teens. They were very patient and good-humored through it all. We even asked our kids, "If you had the opportunity, would you want to do it again?" "Oh, yes, yes." In fact, my son Luke said, "Even if we had the same problems, I'd still do it again." Although looking back on it, you kind of wonder about his motives. The 17-year-old daughter of our friends is now his wife. So they were very discreet about that, though, at the time. But we enjoyed the challenge. We enjoyed the exercise. We enjoyed skimming across the lakes. We enjoyed the scenery, the food. But most of all, we enjoyed each other's company because everybody had a good attitude about it. And how different it could have been if just one of us had gotten into a bad attitude. Attitude makes all the difference in the world. You know, we might not be able to control all the circumstances in our life, But we can choose our attitude. We can't always control the mistakes that other people make that affect us. But we can still choose our attitude and how we respond. We can always choose the manner in which we respond to those circumstances that are beyond our choosing. Now we can finally refer to Philippians 4, verse 11. Paul speaking here, writing the letter. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Even have a good attitude under difficult circumstances. But I'll have to admit that choosing to have a good attitude through a finite, temporary trial that you know is going to end soon, like a difficult canoe trip, is one thing. But maintaining a good attitude through a long-term, ongoing trial with no end in sight is something very different. And it's not really something I've had to experience. I know some of you have. Many in our church have. How do you maintain a good attitude then? Well, a few weeks after we returned home from that canoe trip, I was forced to confront that question for myself. As I explained before, I worked a long time as a high school math teacher, and for the most part, I enjoyed my job. But the school year following that canoe trip turned out to be a very tough one for me and for many of my colleagues at the school where I taught. One of my students died of cancer. One of my former students, a girl I really liked, kind of inexplicably committed suicide. Then there were issues with teachers. One of them went on leave because of health issues. Another kind of abruptly resigned. One went to jail. All issues for which they were unable to finish out the year. And for those of us who were able to finish, it was with a great deal of relief that the school year ended. We had, I guess you could say, biblical expert. We had endured to the end. And I use that expression because one of our duties as a Christian is to endure to the end. Luke 9:62, I'll just read it here. No man having put his hand to the plow and turning back is fit for the kingdom of God. Christians don't give up on their commitments. Christians are not quitters. Except when it comes to sinning or doing stupid things. But overall, we don't quit. We finish what we start, or we try to. But during that first week of school, less than 2 weeks after conquering the canoe trip, and before I was even aware of all the difficulties that lie ahead, my attitude was still rather bad. I felt like quitting. And it was a tempting option. I had already reached eligibility for retirement. In fact, I'd reached eligibility for retirement probably 6 or 7, maybe 8 years ago. But I kept on teaching. It was kind of fun at the time for a while. But this year, this particular year, I really felt like retiring. I was struggling with a number of new administrative edicts. We had some new administrators. It was kind of like a new pharaoh had come in. The pharaoh didn't know you, and pharaoh was not pleased with some of the ways I was doing things, I guess. And we had changed our schedule, and the schedule was bad for all the teachers, actually, that they had changed to. We had to teach twice as many classes. Our planning time was cut in half. We had more students in our classes. At that time, I had over 36 students in each of the 6 classes that I taught. It was over 220 students a day. Other teachers are struggling, too. I wasn't very sympathetic with some of them since they were complaining about having 180 kids today, and I had more than that. I had to get to work before 7 o'clock in the morning. I had to stay till 5 or maybe later in the evening, and even then I had to take work home with me and work late in the evening, and I was getting older and I was getting tired, and it was a huge contrast to the previous year. It was exhausting. Wasn't getting enough sleep. Every day I was scrambling to put together lesson plans. If you don't go in prepared for 36 students, it's chaos and it's stress. And I just can't go on like this, I thought. And like I said, I was eligible for retirement. I wanted to quit, but it just didn't seem like the wisest thing to do. There were financial considerations. We still had three kids living at home at that time, and retirement would have meant a drop in my income and a huge additional expense in order to maintain my current health insurance. Then there was also the fact that I'd actually signed a contract. I signed a contract saying that I would finish the year out. I probably could have gotten out of it, but didn't seem right to go back on my word. I remember giving a sermonette one time on Psalm 15, and Psalm 15, verse 4, actually, it commends the man who swears to his own hurt. He gives his word to his own hurt, and he does not change. And I thought, well, I guess I gotta live by what I tell other people they should do. And so quitting was a very tempting option, but it was not a wise, it probably wasn't the right option either. It's interesting, we do live in a time, though, and a society where and when quitting one's commitments is much more common than it used to be. Husbands and wives will quit in their marriages. Fathers and sometimes mothers will walk out on their families. They'll quit their role as a parent. And even for some of us who'd like to think of ourselves as being more committed and responsible, there are many situations in life where I think we would much prefer not to have to deal with those situations. And quitting would seem like a good short-term solution. Stress, pressure, frustration, maybe monotony, fatigue, or perhaps even pain sometimes can seem overwhelming. And we're tempted to adopt the attitude that, hey, I give up. I'm tired of the battle. I've endured as much as I can. Somebody else is going to have to do this. I hate my job. This boss is treating me unfairly. I could end the stress tomorrow if I just quit. Sleep in and relax. Well, for a few days maybe, and then reality would set in. Bills still need to be paid. The remainder of my message today, though, I'm going to reflect on that experience that I had that year and respond to this question. How do we maintain an attitude that keeps us going, keeps us from quitting, when we want to quit, but we know we shouldn't? How do we maintain an attitude that keeps us going when we want to quit, but we know we shouldn't? You know, beyond something like going through a temporary trial of a difficult canoe trip. Well, I've got 7 points that helped me that year. I kind of developed these 7 points progressively through the year. Number 1, pray. I mean, that's the obvious place to start. You pray. And I've got the 2 points under this, actually, point A and point B. Point A, under prayer, ask God to help make the situation that you're dealing with better. Ask God for help in making the situation better. And then B, ask God for the strength to endure the situation until it's actually made better. For me, the situation did get a little better when a student came in after school one day and he had long blue hair. And he asked to be my aide for one period. And I thought, well, maybe God answers prayers in strange ways sometimes. And so I I said, okay, you can be my aide. And it turned out he was pretty good at correcting papers. And it lightened my load considerably. Point number two, go to God's Word. Go to the Bible for both instruction and encouragement. So there's kind of 2 points under this. A, be encouraged by all the promises in God's Word. And there's certainly many of them, more than I could list. I know I could say meditate on passages like Psalm 34:19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all. God will deliver you out of your afflictions. And certainly there are many more than that one. But be encouraged by what you can read in the Bible. Part B to number two, look for instruction in God's Word. You know, is there anything you'd learn, anything we could learn that would help us through the situation? In my case, was there anything I could do to lighten my load as I strive to keep on going here? Well, Ecclesiastes 10:10 says that if the axe is dull, basically you're not going to be as efficient cutting down that tree. Okay, efficiency. Okay, am I being efficient? In my case, I looked for ways I could be more efficient in dealing with all the student paperwork that I had to deal with. Okay, well, let's see, I'm collecting papers every day. So every day I'm putting scores down in my grade book. And yeah, really, I mean, my aide's putting the scores on the paper. So it's, man, I'm just writing every day. And well, how about if I don't collect the papers until the end of the week, or maybe once a week, and then I only have to write down the scores once rather than five times a week. Oh, okay. And that helped. So go to God's Word, be encouraged by it, look for instruction. Point number three, this was a big one for me. Just take it one day at a time. Make it a goal to get through just one more day. You could begin turning to Matthew 6, verse 34. At the beginning of the school year, in September that year, I was looking ahead at 9 long, grueling months ahead of me. And I'd come home, I think it was, I don't know if it was the first or second week, it was early on, my wife nods her head, and I'd say, I've got to quit. I'm going to retire. I'm going to do it tomorrow. And she'd say, well, no, just do one more day. So I would. And I'd come home at the end of that day. And I'd say, I got to quit. I'm going to do it tomorrow. And she'd say, well, you made it through today. Just make it through one more day. And it continued like that day after day, week after week. But it kept me going. Jesus' words in Matthew 6:34 are relevant here. Matthew 6:34, therefore do not worry about tomorrow, or 9 months from tomorrow. For tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. You know, don't fatigue yourself worrying so far ahead. Don't worry about doing the 9 months of work all at once that I was thinking of. Just do what's sufficient for one day at a time. Point number four, keep a proper perspective. Check your attitude and your outlook. I mean, some of this didn't dawn on me. I'd gone through the canoe trip and kind of forgotten about the attitude thing. You got to avoid a woe is me attitude. You got to avoid self-pity. And I had to realize that other people had endured similar or much worse situations than this. One day at school that year, kind of meet together with a few other teachers for lunch in one of the teachers' rooms, and I was grumbling about the job situation with our school's auto shop teacher, and he had even a heavier workload than I did. and finally said, yes, things are tough. But he said, you know, at least I've got a job. And he said, you know what? My worst day, he said, here as a teacher is still better than the best day that I had on my last job where I was working as a mechanic. And I felt a little bit ashamed, but it helped give me some perspective. You know, I saw him just last week, and I was a substitute in the school where I used to teach, that I hadn't been there for a few years, and I talked with him, and he said, you know, I stopped eating lunch with you guys. And I couldn't really remember. And he said, you may have noticed, I didn't eat lunch with you very much that year. And I said, oh, yeah, why was that? He said, you know, he didn't mention me, but he said he could have. But some of the other teachers were grumbling and griping. He says, you know, I didn't like being around the bad attitude all the time. And it was just pulling me down, so I stopped eating lunch with you guys. And so it was about that time that dawned on me, you know, here was my chance to show that I'd learned the lesson of the canoe trip. Here was my chance to display a good attitude, and I don't think I passed the test. Also at this time, though, I was reading a very compelling book. Some of you may have heard about it, Unbroken. Some of you may have seen the movie, but then this was a few years before the movie came out. But the book, if you haven't read the book, it's better than the movie. True story of Louis Zamperini, crewman on a U.S. Air Force bomber during World War II. Plane crashes in the Pacific. He survives for over 40 days on a tiny inflatable life raft with only a few days' ration of food and water. And then finally he's rescued, but his rescue is by the Japanese Navy. So he ended up having to endure more than a year under torturous conditions in a prisoner of war camp. And I got to thinking, well, if he can endure that, you know, I can endure a job as a teacher. And so that's number four. Keep a proper perspective on things. Because basically, watch your attitude. Five, accept the situation as an opportunity to build character. And ultimately, you know, it is. The only thing we're going to take with us when we die is our character. I think Mr. Armstrong used to say that. And I did. I began to view the situation as an opportunity to build character. I viewed it as a challenge. I viewed it as a trial to overcome. Okay, well, this is my trial. Okay, well, am I going to pass this one? Am I going to pass it with a good attitude? This is my challenge. And got to the point, well, this is not going to defeat me. And I began to feel a sense of accomplishment each day that I made it through. Point number six, and this is related to a couple of my previous points. Have a can-do attitude. Be positive. Be confident. I can do this. Attitude is extremely important. That was the focus of the first part of my message. You know, attitude makes all the difference. Attitude is important. As we saw earlier, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Pray for and use the strength. Use God's Spirit. Use the strength that Christ has to offer. Discouragement is a real killer. Knowing that in the end we're going to succeed, no matter how tough it is, knowing you're going to succeed, you're going to make it, that helps tremendously. We will make it. Point number seven, keep the goal in mind. Keep the goal in mind. If we don't give up, there will be a positive outcome. For me, I had a temporary physical goal that year to keep in mind. And it was a good one. Summer vacation. Teachers always have that as a goal through the year. Knowing that getting through each day brought me that much closer to summer vacation helped keep me going. We realized, though, that in some situation, there may be no physical goal to look forward to. We could turn to 2 Timothy 4, 2 Timothy 4, verse 6. I'll get there eventually here. The Apostle Paul, I think, reached a certain stage in his life where he did not have any physical goals to look forward to. He had endured to the end. And here, he's writing from prison in Rome, probably not too long before his death. 2 Timothy 4, verse 6. For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. He didn't quit. I've kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing. Paul had little, if anything, left to look forward to in his physical life, but the goal of God's kingdom kept him going, and so should it be with us. Ultimately, the goal of God's kingdom should be our motivation to stay committed, endure, and not quit. And sometimes, yeah, it does take those little physical, temporary goals to keep us going too, but ultimately, it's God's kingdom. You could begin turning to John 16 for a concluding scripture here. John 16, verse 33. I look back on my experience that year with somewhat mixed feelings. In one sense, it is with a feeling of accomplishment. I made it through. It was difficult. I had endured. I made it through the year. I did not quit. But on the other hand, I didn't recognize it early enough that I should have done better. I should have had that more positive attitude. I should have been less whiny. So if or when we find ourselves in situations where things have gone wrong, life doesn't seem fair, the trials and problems keep piling up, and we feel like we just can't go on, we want to quit, but we know we shouldn't, well, don't be surprised by those situations, and don't get discouraged. We can have a plan to help us get through those times. Turns out, 2 years after this, I had another situation. Of course, I'll have to save that for another message. And I remembered these situations, and I did better. I'll have to remember to bring that message over here sometime too. But John 16:33, in some of his last instruction to his disciples, Jesus says, "In this world, you will have tribulation. We will face problems. But be of good cheer. Have a good attitude. I have overcome the world." And with God's help, we can too.